Today's program has been brought to you by the Heritage Meat Shop, located in the historic Essex Street Market in New York City. For more information, visit heritagemeatshop.com. You're listening to heritageradionetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us and enjoy the show.
Hey America, I'm Chad Pagano, former Army sniper, chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education, and an avid lifelong hunter. And you're about to experience the Wild Game Domain, From the Hunt to the Hearth, airing live on heritageradionetwork.org. And today, we are talking turkey for, the third time in the short history of this show, because most of my shows have fallen during the spring turkey season, so
right,
it seems to make sense.
And turkey has two seasons, right?
Right, the fall, where I never hunt them because I'm busy trying to kill white-tailed deer. In the fall, you could take a bird, depending on the area you hunt in New York City, you could take one or two birds of either sex. During the fall,
but not the
not in the spring.
In the spring,
right? In the spring, they have to be toms. You know, a fully bearded adult or male turkey, for that matter. I mean, a Jake would be okay.
Right?
Guys tend to hunt the toms. You know, it's their nesting time in the spring. We want to keep the pressure off the hens as much as possible in the spring. And you're allowed in most parts of New York State in the spring. You're allowed two turkeys for the season. You usually get two tags. But you can only take one a day. And in the spring, again, to alleviate some of the pressure put on the hens, hunting pressure put on the hens, we only hunt till 12 o'clock. So it's sun up till 12 o'clock in the afternoon.
So those are the rules in New York then?
Those are the rules.
Okay.
And we're right in the thick of it now. What's today? 21st or something like
yeah.
that? Yeah. So, you know, we got 10 days left, or give or take, of turkey hunt. And truthfully, and if you're a turkey hunter and you're listening to me, this is common knowledge. By this time in the spring season, the party's pretty much over. Things are starting to die down. There's been a lot of pressure put on the turkeys. Every knucklehead has run his way through the woods.
So even though you can only get two turkeys in the season, there's still a tremendous amount of pressure on it.
In the spring, there's a lot of pressure. Yeah, I find the fall... And there's a lot of dedicated turkey hunters, don't get me wrong, who will give up, you know, hunting whitetail or don't even like hunting whitetail and go after the turkey in the fall. But I feel like there's a lot more pressure put on them in the spring when all those venison hunters decide, you know, I can't hunt deer, but I want to be out in the woods hunting something. And that brings up a point I was thinking about. If you guys heard the Steve, you guys weren't here. Obviously, you were too busy to be here that day. But we had Steven Rinella. You know, host of Meat Eater TV, amazing hunter, amazing conservationist. I mean, he made my argument in a half hour, an argument that I couldn't make in, 18 episodes or however many episodes we've done. The guy's brilliant. But he said something to me that I found, I wouldn't say shocking, I don't like that word, but surprising, I guess. I asked him about his emotional response to killing deer, and he said he doesn't have any. You know, I'm paraphrasing. I forgot exactly what he said. But he was like, basically, I have no emotional response to shooting a deer. They're abundant. There's a lot of them. And I guess
sure,
that's...
But still, I think you would get to the point where you'd say, you know, even if you're fishing and you pull a fish up and you say, well, you know what, you're taking an animal's life.
Right. No, that's why it was surprising about it. And no one is questioning, especially me, questioning Steven Rinella's credentials as far as conservation and caring for animals and what he's done for the industry or the sport or you know, just the lobby of hunting. But that was a little surprising to me. But then I started really reflecting on it. And maybe it's my my filter or how I think of it, mm-hmm. I have no emotional response to killing turkeys.
Okay.
So I think I base my emotional response to the size of the game I'm killing. Mm. Deer are bigger than turkey. For some reason, that elicits...
So like worms and ants, it's like no issue.
No, none. It has nothing to do with abundance. It has nothing to do...
It's size.
I'm being honest with you here, all right? So you could attack me. We're family. I'm just trying to be honest.
Maybe you just hate turkeys.
So...
No, I know he hates wild boar. It's not turkeys.
I hate wild boar. But no, I don't... You know... Turkeys, I don't hate. I actually appreciate them, and I want to talk a little bit about their symbolism, some of their traits, things we really haven't gotten to yet. But I as I reflected on that Steven Rinella comment, I said, wow. And then I thought, well, I'm the same with turkey. I will shoot a turkey and not blink an eye. And it comes from, too, I think the fact that the size of the animal, which seems to make no sense, right? Like, I don't know, killing small people would be okay. You know, by my theory, which I would never do, of course, so don't get all crazy. I'm not talking about that. I'm just saying, by comparison, it's a living creature, and it should have as much worth as any living creature. But for me, a turkey is expendable. It's a renewable, what do we want to call it, a commodity? No. Hmm. It's a renewable food source that is always abundant the way the hunters...
Well, it's always abundant because it's controlled, though, right?
Right, because of the way we've... taking care of this animal. Like we've said before, you know, in the early 1900s, they were down to 30,000 turkeys nationwide, something like that. Now we're up over 5 million or something. I mean, we have a very healthy turkey population now. So, and maybe that has something to do with it. And that was Steven Rinella's point. Mm-hmm. For him to kill a deer, he sees no emotion. He gets no emotional response. And he basically went on to say, you know, there's a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And they need to die, and I use them properly, and I eat them. And, you know, so I kind of understood what he was saying. I just found it a little weird. And then he went on to talk about bears and his emotional response to killing bears, and there was a big emotional response to that. So everyone's different, and mm-hmm. I hope this doesn't come across as me attacking Steven Rinella, because that would be the last thing I want to do. The guy, like I said, I'm a big fan of his. But, you know, the idea of taking a 12-gauge shotgun, drawing an animal in to within, you know, hopefully closer, but within, for me, 30, 40 yards, mm-hmm. possibly 50 yards, and then taking that shot, I don't blink an eye. Is there something wrong with me, Chef? I know you love birds, so I want to respond. I know you're the bird man. So turkeys are kind of like birds.
You're just used to it.
I'm just used to it. I've become desensitized.
Yep,
you think?
That's it. That's it. Desensitized.
Okay, so let's play a little game here for a second. I want to throw some words out. Let me finish the list.
Okay.
And then tell me what comes to mind when I say these words: pride, abundance, generosity, awareness, virility, fertility, sacrifice. What comes to mind when I read that list of words?
Sounds like America to me.
No, that's nice, but that's not what I had in mind. That is the words that came to mind when I thought of the turkey that I hunt, which makes it even more scary for me after saying that list that I have no emotional response to killing them. But I think also, not to jump all over the place, but just to justify my stance on this.
Okay.
I eat them. And I think it's okay not to have an emotional response when you kill something that you eat. All right? I said it. There. I said it. It's okay. It's okay that Steven Rinella has no emotional response to killing deer because he eats them. Do you have an emotional response when you go to Pathmark and buy a porterhouse steak?
Well, wait a minute. But that's different, right? It's wrapped in plastic, and you totally disconnected from the fact that it was walking around.
Yeah,
breathing.
But as an intelligent, informed person, you buy this package of meat. You know it came from a living animal.
Do you think most people think of that when they're in the supermarket and they're looking in the meat counter? They know it came from a walking animal?
I would hope, because I'm still an optimist, that most people can put that all together, I hope. But there's probably a lot of people that don't even go that deeply into the thought of it. But if you follow me on Twitter, I posted a little news article. It was actually a letter someone had written to a local newspaper. And it was addressed to the hunters. Mm-hmm. And it said, hey, evil hunters. And again, I'm paraphrasing. Why don't you just go to the supermarket and buy meat where the animals are all wrapped up and it's all neat and done so the animals don't have to suffer. And I had to kind of cut
that out.
I think
the animal suffers less when you hunt than when it's put in the line, no matter how they make the line, like some people do, so that the animal doesn't see what's happening.
Thank you.
Can I just add something real quick, Chad?
Yeah, please.
So, yeah, I don't usually jump in, but I did go to a slaughterhouse in Kansas City not so long ago, a few months ago, and I expected to have an emotional response. And, you know, you see the pigs, and they're all cute, and then I went into the killing floor and watched the whole operation go down, and I had no emotional response at all, and I kind of felt weird about that.
Now, did you analyze that at all? Why do you think you had no emotional response to that?
I don't know. I guess just watching them do it, I thought it was a really clean process. And, you know, you understand that animals die in order to be eaten. And there was nothing about it that made me emotional.
So we kind of agree on some levels. You know, it's food.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to die, right? A friend of mine who also hosts the radio show on this network, Erica, just did TEDx. And she had a great line from that. If you haven't seen it, check it out.
Yeah, it's a great episode.
Yeah. Even though she attacks me on some levels, but we'll get to that later. I love her anyhow. She said, if it doesn't fly, walk, swim, or grow, don't eat it.
Right.
And I said, that was well said. Perfect. That's what you got to live by. You know, so this whole thing about the separation of us from our food, you know, and it applies to turkey. And I, you know, just to sum up again, everything I'm about, I go out and kill my own food. There is no greater feeling or no deeper connection to what we are as humans, you know, our place on this earth than going out and doing it. I think it wakes you up. It makes you part of the food chain. It's our natural place. Our natural place is not, I don't care, to go into a supermarket and buy food and have zero connection to it. You know, I know we've always bartered and we've always had elements in society that were provided food and others who gathered or hunted that food. So I get that. There's hunters and there's providers and there's people who get provided, right? So you know, going to the supermarket, I'm not calling you out. There's nothing wrong with that. But there is no greater connection to the meat we eat than killing it yourself. Forget about cooking it, Chef. He's looking at me, I think, through his
Ray-Bans.
Yeah, rock star. And cooking, it's part of the process, and I think that helps us and that connects us. That gets us a little closer to the food we eat, obviously. My wife doesn't cook. I don't feel like she's connected. I love you, but you don't. And I don't feel like she's as connected to the food that I, you know, as I am. But nothing will make that bond or have help you get a better understanding of the food chain, of life in general, than going out and killing it yourself. And I'll never change my mind on that.
Well, it's a start to help you also understand seasonality, right? You can't hunt turkey all year.
Right.
And then you begin to understand that all food is not available all year, all the time, that it has a season. But like when you go out and you hunt turkey, though, do you have to like kind of entice the turkey towards you? Or are you like you're stalking them or you're like calling them?
See, I love this because Jess is an aspiring hunter.
That's right.
She wants to get out there, and I'm trying to push her to the next level. I gave her a book she never returned. I wanted her to read.
I have read it.
All right. So return it. I don't want to call you out. No. Yes. So, you know, we've already discussed that on some of the shows, but, you know, there's many different techniques. There's a few different techniques. I wouldn't say many. And why don't we talk about those when we come back from our break? But before we take our break, I want to talk about our membership drive here at heritageradionetwork.org. Please support us on this membership drive. Go to our website. Become a member, support the organization. They're doing great things in promoting food, across the country. So if you could help us out, we'd greatly appreciate it. We have everything from, what are we calling it, student memberships, all the way up to the, I call it the Mayor Bloomberg.
Well, we have a family membership, an individual membership. And, you know, it's the kind of thing, like, you listen to Heritage Radio online, and it's not just this show. There are a lot of really great shows.
And absolutely.
And you should join.
This is the best show. But
and thanks to Jesse and Chris for becoming members.
Yes, thank you, guys.
Thank
Last week, they were. And and not to put Jesse on the spot, this is more of a compliment
more,
to Chef
more
Chris.
Chef Chris, right.
Chef Chris bought Jesse's
That's
membership.
Right.
That's
he
the kind of guy
membership.
He is over there.
Good man.
All right. Having said that, let's take a short break, and we'll be right back with the Wild Game Domain on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
This one's called When It Rains by Four Lincolns, and you're listening to the Wild Game Domain on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Little do they know that I'm the end of the rainbow. She tells me there's money to be made digging graves. She says a lot of things. I get the river had its way with old bear drowning.
Following is a message from the Heritage Meat Shop.
Are you tired of just hearing buzzwords? Do you want to actually take part in the food revolution? Then come on down to the Heritage Meat Shop, located in New York's historic Essex Street Market, on the corner of Essex and Delancey. We have rare breed pork, beef, poultry, lamb, and goat, not to mention charcuterie that'll make you squeal. All raised right, by the right people, so you know they'll taste right. Try the meat that over 100 New York chefs ache for. Come to the Heritage Meat Shop and pick up some revolution today.
For more information, visit heritagemeatshop.com.
Hey, welcome back. You're listening to the Wild Game Domain on Heritage Radio Network, and we're here with Chris Jeswaldy and Jesse Riley, who I so arrogantly didn't introduce again and say hello to before the show started. Sorry, guys. Jesse was asking about calling turkeys and some of the techniques we use while hunting, and I was going to get into that right after the break, but let's get to that. But I want to read something real quick. This is, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit today, you know, in general about the turkey and, you know, my respect for that animal, even though it elicits no emotional response upon dying by my gun. I still have a respect for the animal, obviously. And so I was doing a lot of research on how the Native Americans, how the Indians kind of harvested, how they used this animal, how they looked at this animal in their society. And I came across this old Cherokee legend, the Cherokee Indians. And it goes like this. When the terrapin won the race from the rabbit, all the animals wondered and talked about it a great deal because they had always thought the terrapin to be slow. Although they knew that he was a warrior and had many secrets held within. But the turkey was not satisfied and told the others there must be some trick about how he does it. He said, I know the terrapin can't run, he can hardly crawl, and I'm going to try him. So one day the turkey met the terrapin coming home from war with a fresh scalp hanging around his neck and dragging on the ground as he traveled. The turkey laughed at the sight and said, that scalp don't look right on you. Your neck is too short and low down to wear it that way. Let me show you. The terrapin agreed and gave the scalp to the turkey, who fastened it around his neck. Now, said the turkey, I'll walk a little way and you can see how it looks. So he walked ahead a short distance and then turned and asked the terrapin how he liked it. Said the terrapin, it looks very nice. It becomes you. Now I'll fix it in a different way and let you see how it looks, said the turkey. So he gave the string another pull and walked ahead again. Oh, that looks very nice, said the terrapin. But the turkey kept on walking, and when the terrapin called to him to bring back the scalp, he only walked faster and broke into a run. Then the terrapin got out his bow and by his conjuring art shot a number of cane splints into the turkey's leg to cripple him so he could not run, which accounts for all the many small bones in the turkey legs that are of no use whatsoever. But the terrapin never caught the turkey, who still wears the scalp around his neck. So I love that story because
that's a great story.
It's a great legend. First of all, it calls up everything. It calls up, you know, the Native American pride of war and defense of their nation, you know, warriors within their tribes. It gives credit to both animals in some ways. You know, the turkey looks down upon the terrapin.
And the terrapin's got a few tricks.
But the terrapin is a great warrior. He may not be that quick, but he's a great warrior. So, you know, there are thousands of these legends about the turkey. So it goes to show the importance of this animal in our natural history here in this country, you know, dating back 800, you know, the Indians, 800 BC. I mean, certain tribes were farm raising turkeys for food. You know, they were able to farm raise these animals. Never mind hunting them, using just about every part of the animal.
Well, you probably, like in your research, saw that Ben Franklin wanted the turkey instead of the eagle, right?
Yes, and I'm kind of torn. I'm a big, as a revolutionary, I'm a big Ben Franklin fan, as you know. I don't know. I get it. That, you know, listen, people don't realize the turkey, we see it sitting in the freezer again at Pathmark, and we think it's a big, fat, stupid bird, right? Nothing could be further from the truth. They are alert. They're fierce. They're fast. You know, they have a survivability that I only wish I could have. They're amazing creatures. They're loyal to to each other. They're defensive of their own. They're an amazing animal. When you're hunting them, you know, deer, you could put on a big orange suit and sit in a tree. And deer are very alert. They have great hearing. They have their you know, survivability traits.
Right.
But a turkey could see color. I mean, you got to camouflage yourself down, stop moving. My respect for that animal. Having said that, let's stick with the eagle, right? It's just a little more,
yeah,
a little more demanding, I'll say. I like that. I like the eagle better. Okay, so getting back to Jesse's question.
Right, so when you call them, right, there's a whole thing about you can do a certain call and attract other males. And right. You can fake out the male and do a female call.
Right. So it depends on when you're hunting, really. But the overall answer to that, or a general answer to that, is first you got to locate them.
Mm-hmm.
So you show up at your site, your area. Maybe some hunters, some serious turkey hunters, will who have access to the same property. Maybe your lease, you own the property. You'll know where they're roosting. You may even roost those turkeys the night before, go out into the woods, put them up in flight so they land in a tree, so you know where they're roosting for the night. Most of the time, what I do is I'll get out of my car and I'll do what we call locator calls.
Okay.
Early morning, it's still dark, sun just maybe popping up. We do a couple of gobbles. We'll walk a little bit and just do some gobbles. That time in the morning in the woods, sounds traveling very far. If that doesn't elicit a response from other toms, I will do a crow call, and the crow call usually 9 times out of 10 will get them to vocalize, gobble back, so I could hear them. They're warning each other. They're sending a warning to that crow. Don't come and mess with us. What I don't like about the crow call, I tend to find it makes the turkeys a little skittish.
Right, because they're trying to avoid a predator.
Right. So if I start with the gobble and get an elicit a response, that's where, and then I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
Then I move in, and we have many different tools. I use a diaphragm call that I keep in my mouth while I'm hunting, and as I'm moving to the location where I want to make my stand to draw the turkeys in, I will I'll have this diaphragm call in, and I'll do a few clucks or a few purrs, imitating a hen.
Mm-hmm.
I may even carry my shaker, my gobbler, and do a few gobbles as I'm moving. So if they hear a branch break or they hear a little shuffle in my foot, and I'm trying to be quiet, they may associate it with this hen call and say, oh, that is a turkey moving. It's not a human. I actually use that technique when I'm going into the woods to get into my deer stand in the fall, not to alert deer. So
you make them think it's another animal.
Right. So as I'm walking, I have the diaphragm call in my mouth, and if I do shuffle a leaf or snap a little branch, I'll go ahead and do a couple of clucks with the diaphragm call, hoping that a deer says, oh, I just heard something snap, I'm alerted, but wait, I just heard a turkey, so now I can relax again. So I take it to the extreme. But once you settle in, you camouflage yourself. Everyone's got techniques. You might be hunting out of a ground blind, a permanent area where you've already put up a tent, mm-hmm. a camouflage tent, a blind. Generally, bow hunters will do that. They'll hunt out of a blind and try to call them, the mm-hmm. turkeys, into that area. When you've got a shotgun, I do it a little differently. It's called running and gunning. You're basically looking, trying to locate them, and then moving in close, and then trying to get them to come in the rest of the way. Biggest mistake people make, they overcall.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to answer the turkey every time they produce a call. And that's what I see guys doing when they start turkey hunting. They're so excited that the turkey responded that they feel they have to go right back. And
so it's like you're having a conversation.
Yeah. But first of all, you know, that's not how their conversations go.
Right.
And you got to give the turkey time to think about what's happening and let him have a little mystery to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I gobble, I get a response, I gobble back. I may gobble again violently, trying to imitate a very aggressive Tom coming back at that turkey saying,
right.
No, this is my area.
Right.
And then I just let it rest.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll hear him gobble again. And he may not gobble again for another 15, 20 minutes. He may not gobble again until I call, but I let it rest for 10 or 15 minutes. I'm hopeful that now this Tom is closing the distance to me. Oh, yeah? You want it? Oh, it's your area? Hold on. I'll be right over there. I'm coming. Now I have decoys out. I may have a Tom decoy with a couple of hen decoys.
Did those really fool them?
That fools them. They come right in on them. Depending on the quality, and I've seen some low-quality decoys get attacked by toms. They come in. I was bow hunting this season,
right.
Sitting in, and a tom came in, and I had two hens and a tom decoy out.
Uh-huh.
And what I had done, they're on a single stand stuck in the field, and you know, a piece of plastic coming up into the center of the decoy.
Right.
And they're made of hollow plastic, kind of.
Uh-huh.
So it was a very calm day, and the wind, usually when the wind blows, they'll kind of catch a little bit and move and sway with the wind, but there was no wind or everything. So I had been reading this article in one of the magazines I read, and it said, attach some fishing wire to the end of it and bring it back to your blind.
Mm-hmm.
So you could jerk it a little bit and put a little movement into them as the turkeys are approaching. So I already had a turkey down, so I said, you know, we're going to have a little fun with this. Let's try this string thing, and I did. And this Tom was on the woodline strutting. I could see him. He was probably 100 yards off on the mm-hmm. other side, and he was strutting back and forth. You could tell he was aggravated. I wasn't even sure. We were in a little bit of grass, so I wasn't even sure if they could really see the turkey, the decoys. And so I just started shaking it almost violently, and I was afraid it was going to fall off its stand. And as I did that, and I did a few gobbles at the same time, this turkey basically took flight. He jumped, went about 20 yards closer, hit the ground, and beelined straight for that turkey and jumped on it and knocked it off its stand. After it fell, it still continued to jump on it. And then finally it turned around and walked off. And to make a long story short, he was so aggravated. I was just enjoying the show.
I'm sure he was aggravated.
He turned and started walking off. So I did a few gobbles. And he turned, and he was back. I had a perfect shot right into his breast, and that I missed. I was so excited and into it. I had flung the arrow right over him, and which he didn't even notice. The arrow, he kind of something buzzed by him.
His adrenaline was up. He was pissed.
And he just, as quickly as he came in and killed that decoy, he turned around. The funny thing is he didn't say hello to the hens. He didn't brush up against the hens. He was showing that Tom. That's what you get for messing with me. So, you know, that was a great day out in the woods. Wow.
Yeah, wow, right?
It's 11:29. Where does the time go? Chef Chris didn't say three words, and I wanted to beat him up.
I said about six.
Six words today? We got to get you more involved, man. You're a brilliant man. Funny man. We didn't have time for a recipe. We discussed before the show. We were going to talk about a recipe.
We were talking about, you know, turkey on the bone, wild turkey. You like to grind it up.
I don't like roasting a whole wild turkey. Maybe it's my conditioning from when I was a kid eating butter balls and what turkey should be. I've never had a whole roasted wild turkey that I
like
really...
I like spit roasted turkey.
Mm. I could see that.
Those are nice.
I know you guys both feel like on the bone's the way to go. And you're both better chefs than me, so I got to respect that on some levels. For me, I grind it all. I use it in burgers throughout the year. I'd say it's my chopped meat.
But Chris, you were saying you would never grind up breast meat, right?
It's too good.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, see, sometimes I will
smoke it or do something like that.
Yeah. See, stuff like that I probably would enjoy.
Cook it nice and slow.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I was telling you, I make a turkey, a wild turkey jambalaya.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll use the breast meat for that. Just for the fact that it's in this beautiful broth or whatever you call it, you know, then the jambalaya with everything, and I'll throw shrimp and everything in there. I love it that way.
You make a mole out of it. It's great.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody likes mole.
Yeah, you do like a sous vide of the turkey breast. It's beautiful, right?
Chad doesn't like the French words.
Oh.
Yeah, well, we're going to get into your whole sous vide one of these days, Chef. I'm going to put you on cooking in a bag, as we call it in this country.
We like it.
Yeah, no, I mean, you've never produced a bad meal out of a bag.
Well, I gave you something mediocre the other day.
Yes, you did. That was the first time. It was shocking. And it wasn't bad. It was just mediocre. All right, listen. Guys, unfortunately, that's all the time we have today. I would like to thank Jack for, first of all, jumping in with his story and producing and engineering today's show. You can always find archived episodes of The Wild Game Domain from the Hunt to the Hearth on heritageradionetwork.org or on iTunes as a podcast. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.